out of here.
She purposely steps on a page, and I can't find it in me to blame her.
Well, I can't kick you out, because it's Landon's place. But I will leave if you don't explain this shit. Now!
She adds, showing that, despite her anger, she's still sweet. I've been writing for a long time, since the very beginning of us. But I didn't have any intention of doing anything with it. I was only venting, using the paper to figure out what the fuck was going on in my head. But then I had this idea.
When?
Her finger presses against my chest, jabbing at me in what she must think is a forceful way. But she couldn't be more wrong. I won't tell her that, not right now. I started it after we kissed.
The first time?
Her hands spread, shoving my chest, and I wrap my fingers around them as they push against me again.
You were playing me.
She wrenches her hands from mine and digs her open hands into her long hair.
No, I wasn't. It wasn't like that,
I say, trying not to raise my voice. It's hard, but I manage to keep a somewhat subdued tone. She paces the small living room, fuming and whirling. Her hands clenched at her sides before she throws them into the air again.
So many secrets! Too many secrets! I'm over it!
You're over it? I gape at her. Her body is still moving restlessly around the room.
Talk to me. Tell me how you feel about all of this. How I feel?
She shakes her head, her eyes wild.
I feel like this was a wake-up call. The string that pulled me back into reality and away from the ridiculous hopes of the last few days. This is us.
She waves her hand back and forth.
There is always some bomb waiting to explode, and I'm not foolish enough to wait to be destroyed. Not anymore. This isn't a bomb, Tessa. You act as if I was writing this to purposely hurt you.
She opens her mouth to speak, before closing it again. At a loss for words, I'm sure. When she collects herself, she says,
And just how did you think I would feel when I saw this? You knew I would find out eventually. Why didn't you just tell me about it? I hate the way this feels.
The way what feels? I ask with caution.
This feeling. It's like a burning in my chest when you pull stuff like this. And I hate it. I haven't felt this way in so long, and I never wanted to feel it again. Yet here we are.
The sound of defeat is clear in her soft voice, and my skin rises in bumps when she turns away from me.
Come here.
I reach for her arm and pull her as close to me as she will allow. Her arms cross in front of her as I crush her against my chest. She doesn't fight me off, but she doesn't hug me. She stands still, and I'm not sure if the worst is over.
Tell me what you are feeling.
My voice comes out awkward and short.
What you are thinking.
She pushes against my chest again, with less force this time, and I let her go. She bends down at her knees and picks up one of the pages. I had originally started writing this as a form of expression, and honestly, because I'd run out of shit to read. I was in between books, and Tessa, Teresa Young at the time, had started to intrigue me. She started to annoy me and piss me off, and I found myself thinking about her more and more. When she was in my head, there didn't seem to be room for anything else. She became an obsession, and I convinced myself that it was a part of the game. But I knew better than that. I just wasn't ready to admit it yet. I remember the way I felt the first time I saw her, the way her lips looked so pouty, and the way I cringed at her outfit. The skirt she wore had touched the floor, and her flat shoes were causing the damn thing to drag across it awkwardly. She stared down at the floor when she spoke her name for the first time.
Yeah. My name is Tessa.
And I remember thinking she had an odd name. I hadn't paid much attention after that. Nate was nice to her, and I was irritated by the way she stared at me, judging me with those grey eyes. She nagged at me every day, even when she didn't speak to me, especially then.
Are you even listening to me?
Her voice breaks through the memory, and I look over at her to find her fuming again. I hesitate.
You weren't even listening,
she accuses, rightfully so.
I can't believe you would do this. This is what you were doing all of those times I came home, and you would put your binder away. This is what I found in the closet just before I found my father.
I won't make excuses, but half of the shit in there is from my intoxicated mind.
Trash?
Her eyes scan the page in her hand.
She couldn't hold her liquor. She stumbled through the room in a messy way. The way tasteless girls move when they drink too much to impress others. Stop reading that shit. That part isn't about you. I swear it, and you know it.
I pull the page from her, but she quickly snatches it back.
No! You don't get to write my story and tell me that I can't read it. You still haven't explained anything.
She moves across the living room, lifting a shoe from the rug near the front door. She pushes both feet into her shoes and adjusts her shorts.
Where are you going?
I'm prepared to follow her.
I'm going for a walk. I need air. I need to get out of here.
I can tell she's mentally cursing herself for giving me any bit of information.
I'll come with you. No, you won't.
Her keys are in her hands, and she gathers her messy hair above her head, twisting it and tying it back to control it.
You are barely dressed,
I point out. She sends me a murderous glare. Without a word, she leaves the apartment, slamming the door behind her. Nothing was accomplished just now. Nothing solved. The plan I had to control the complications turned into a fucking disaster. And now shit's even more complicated. I kneel down on the floor, forcing myself not to follow her, throw her over my shoulder while she's kicking and screaming, and lock her in her room until she's ready to talk to me. No, I can't do that. That would be backtracking on all the progress I've made. Instead, I gather the scrambled pages from the floor and read over some of the words, reminding myself why I decided to try to do something with this shitty writing in the first place.
What is that you keep trying to hide over there?
Nate leaned over, being nosy as ever.
Nothing, man. Mind your business.
Harden scowled, staring across the courtyard. He didn't know how he started sitting here every day, at this exact time. It had nothing to do with Tessa and annoying ass Landon meeting at the coffee shop every morning. Nothing at all to do with that. He didn't want to see the obnoxious girl. He really didn't.
I heard you and Molly last night in the hallway, you sick fuck.
Nate flicked the ashes off his cigarette and made a face.
Well, I wasn't going to let her in my room, and she wouldn't take no for an answer.
Harden laughed, proud that she was so willing to blow him at any moment, even in the hallway next to his room. What he didn't tell them was that he'd turned her down and ended up jerking off while thinking of a certain blonde.
You're an asshole, Nate shook his head. Isn't he an asshole?
He asked Logan, as the third boy approached the rundown picnic table.
Yeah, he is.
Logan held his hand out for a cigarette from Nate, and Harden tried not to look at the girl in the potato sack skirt waiting to cross the street.
One of these days you're going to fall in love, and I'm going to laugh my fucking ass off. You'll be the one giving oral in the hallway, and the chick won't let you in her room.
Nate got a kick out of mocking him this way, but he could barely hear him.
Why does she dress that way?
He found himself wondering as she rolled up the sleeves of her long-sleeved shirt. Harden watched, pen in hand, as she walked closer, her eyes focused on the sidewalk in front of her, and she apologized too many times when she bumped into a puny boy, causing a book to fall from his hands. She bent down to help and smiled at him, and Harden couldn't help remembering how soft her lips were when she forced herself on him the other night. He was surprised as fuck. He didn't take her as the type to make the first move, and was fairly positive that she had only kissed her lame-ass boyfriend before. Her gasping and the way her hands were so eager to touch him made that pretty clear.
So what's going on with the bet?
Logan nodded toward Tessa as she smiled widely, spotting Landon in all of his nerd glory, backpack and all.
Nothing new,
Harden instantly replied, covering the paper with one arm. How was he supposed to know what was going on with the mouthy, poorly dressed girl? She had barely spoken to him since her crazy-ass mom and lame-ass boyfriend had showed up pounding on her door Saturday morning. Why was her name written on this paper? And why was Harden feeling like he was going to break out in a full-on sweat if Logan didn't stop staring like he knew something?
She's annoying, but she seems to like me more than Zed, at least.
She's hot, the two guys said at the same time. If I was a dickhead, I would go against the two of you. I'm better looking anyway,
Nate teased, sharing a laugh with Logan.
I want nothing to do with this shit. This is all fucking stupid. Really, you shouldn't have fucked his girlfriend.
Logan scolded Harden, who only laughed.
It was worth it, he said,
looking back to the sidewalk across the courtyard. She had disappeared, and he changed the subject, asking about that weekend's party coming up. As the two of them bickered over how many cakes to buy, Harden found himself writing down how afraid she'd looked on Friday when she nearly pounded his door in to get away from that creepy Neil who tried to make a move on her. He's a bastard and would surely remain pissed at Harden for the bottle of bleach he poured on his bed Sunday night. It wasn't like Harden gave a shit about her. It was the principle of the situation. After that, the words just kept writing themselves. I had no control over it. And with every interaction I had with her, I had more to say about her. About the way she crinkled her nose in disgust when she explained to me that she hated ketchup. I mean, who hates ketchup? With every small detail I learned about her, my feelings grew. I would deny them until later, but they were there. When we lived together, it grew harder to write. I found myself writing much less often, but when I did, I would hide my latest writing in the closet in a shoebox. I had no idea that Tessa had found the damn thing until now, and here I am, wondering when I will stop complicating my damn life. More memories flood my mind, and I wish I could just plug her into my head so she could read my thoughts and decipher my intentions. If she were in my head, she could see the conversation that led me to New York City to meet with publishers. It wasn't something that I had ever intended to do. It just happened. I had written down so many moments, so many memorable moments between us. The first time I said I loved her, the second time when I didn't take it back. Thinking about all of these memories while cleaning up this mess is overwhelming, and I can't help the memories from setting up shop in my mind. He was leaning against the goalpost, pissed and bruised. Why had he started a fight with those guys in the middle of the stupid-ass bonfire anyway? Oh yeah, because Tessa left with Zed, and he hung up on Harden, leaving him with nothing but a sarcastic tone and the knowledge that Tessa was in Zed's apartment. It drove him much crazier than it should have. He wanted to forget about it, block it out, and feel physical pain in place of the unwelcome burn of jealousy. Would she fuck him? He kept thinking. Would he win? Was it even about winning anymore? He couldn't tell. The lines had blurred sometime, and Harden couldn't exactly put his finger on when it happened. But he was aware of it, sort of. He had sat down on the grass, wiping the blood from his mouth, when Tessa approached. Harden's vision was slightly blurred, but she was clear. He remembered that. During the drive back to Ken's house, she was fidgety, unsure, and acting as if she were with some rabid animal. She focused on the road and asked, "Do you love me?" Harden was surprised. Hell, he was fucking surprised and not prepared to answer her question. He'd already proclaimed his love for her, then taken it back. And there she was, crazy as ever, asking if he loved her while his face was swelling and bruising. Of course he loved her. Who the fuck was he kidding?
Harden avoided answering her question for a while, but holding back became unbearable, and he found the words spilling out.
It's you. You're the person that I love the most in the world.
It was true, as embarrassing and uncomfortable as it was to admit. He loved her, and he knew from then on that his life would never be the same after her. If she left him, if she spent the remainder of her life absent from his, he would still never be the same. She had altered him. And there he stood, bloody knuckles and all, wanting to be better for her. The next day, I found myself giving the pile of crumpled, coffee-stained pages a title, After. I still wasn't ready or actually considering publishing it until I made the mistake of bringing it to one of my group therapy sessions a few months ago. Luke had grabbed the binder from under my plastic chair as I told the story of burning my mother's house to the ground. The words were forced. I hate talking about that shit. But I kept my eyes above the curious eyes watching me and pretended that Tessa was there, in the room, smiling and proud of me for sharing my darkest time with a group of strangers who are just as fucked up as I am. Was. I had reached down to grab the binder as Dr. Tran dismissed our group. My panic was short-lived when I looked over at Luke and found the binder in his hands.
What is all this?
He asked, his eyes going over a page. If you would have met me a month ago, you would be swallowing your fucking teeth right now. I glared at him, grabbing the binder from his grasp.
Sorry, man. I'm not good at social etiquette.
His smile was uncomfortable, and for some reason it made me feel as if I could trust him.
Clearly.
I rolled my eyes, shoving all the loose pages back into the pockets. He laughed.
Will you tell me what it is if I buy you a root beer from next door? How sad are we?
A couple of recovering alcoholics negotiating to read a life story. I shook my head, wondering how I got to this point at such a young age. But I was so thankful for Tessa. If not for her, I would still be hiding in the darkness, left to rot.
Well, root beer won't make you burn any houses down, and it won't make me say hurtful things to Casey.
Fine. Root beer is fine. I knew he was going to Dr. Tran for more than couples counseling, but I decided not to be a complete dickhead and call him out on it. We walked to the restaurant next door. I ordered a shitload of food on his tab and ended up letting him read a few pages of my confessional. 20 minutes later, I had to put an end to it. He would have read the entire thing if I'd let him.
This is amazing. Really, man. This is fucked up in some parts, but I get it. It wasn't you talking. It was the demons.
Demons, huh? I took a long draw, finishing off the root beer in my glass.
Yeah, demons. When you're drunk, you are full of them.
He smiled.
Some of this I just read, I know wasn't written by you. It has to be the demons.
I shook my head. He was right, of course. But I couldn't help but picture a creepy little red dragon thing on my shoulder, writing the fucked up shit that was on some of those pages.
You'll let her read this when you finish it, right?
I dipped a cheese stick into some sauce and tried not to cuss him out for ruining my amusing thoughts about little demon creatures.
No. No way would I let her read this shit.
I tapped my finger across the leather binding, remembering how excited Tessa was for me to use it when she bought it. I fought the idea, of course, but now I love the stupid thing.
You should. I mean, take some of that twisted stuff out, especially the part about her being infertile. That was just wrong.
I know. I didn't look at him. I looked down at the table and cringed, wondering what the hell was going through my mind when I wrote that shit.
You should consider doing more with it. I'm not expert on literature or Hemingway, but I know that what I read was really, really good.
I swallow, choosing to ignore the mispronunciation.
Publish this,
I chuckled.
No fucking way.
I ended the conversation there.
But job interview after job interview, I was bored, so fucking bored. And I left each one feeling even less challenged than at the last. And I couldn't imagine sitting in any of those shitty offices. I wanted to work in publishing. I did. But I found myself rereading page after page of my fucked up thoughts. And the more I read and remembered, the more I wanted, no, needed, to do something with it. It just sat there, begging for me to at least try. And I had this idea in my head that if she saw it, after I could cut some of the harsh shit out, she would love it. It became an obsession, and I was surprised by the interest people seemed to have in watching someone else's road to self-recovery. Fucked up, but they ate the shit up. I emailed each potential house a copy via an agent I knew from my time at Vance. Apparently, the days of bringing in a stack of half-handwritten, half-typed pages are over. This would be it, though, or so I thought. I thought this book would be the grand gesture that she needed to accept me back into her life. Granted, I thought it would be months from now, when the book was printed, and she'd had more time to do whatever the fuck she's been doing here in New York City. I can't sit here any longer. There is a limit to my newly found patience, and I've reached it. I hate, absolutely loathe, the idea of Tessa walking around this massive city alone, mad at me. She's been gone long enough, and I have explaining to do. A lot of it. I grab the last page of the book and shove it into my pocket, not bothering to fold it. Then I text Landon and tell him to leave the door unlocked if he comes in or goes out, and head out of the apartment to find her. I don't have far to go, though. When I step outside, I find her sitting on the front stoop of the building. She's gazing off into nothing, her eyes focused and hard. She doesn't notice me when I approach her. Only when I sit down next to her does she look up at me, her eyes still distant. I watch closely as they slowly soften. "We need to talk." She nods and looks away, waiting for an explanation. Chapter 74. Harden. "We need to talk," I repeat and look at her, forcing my hands to stay in my own lap.
"I would say."
She forces a smile. Her knees are dirty, marked with angry red lines.
"What happened? Are you all right?"
My plan to keep my hands to myself goes out the window as I reach for her legs, examining the wounds closer. She turns away, cheeks red and eyes matching.
"I tripped, that's all."
None of this was ever supposed to happen.
"You wrote a book about us and shopped it around to publishers. How is that not intentional?"
"No, I mean all of this. You and I. Everything." The air is humid, and I'm finding it harder than I expected to get the words out. "This year has been an entire lifetime for me. I've learned so much about myself and about life and about how life should be. I had this fucked up view of everything. I hated myself. I hated everyone around me." She remains silent, but I can tell by the trembling of her bottom lip that she's doing her best to keep a straight face. "I know you don't understand. Not many people do. But the worst feeling in the entire fucking world is hating yourself. And that's what I dealt with every single day. That wasn't an excuse for the shit I pulled. I should have never treated you the way that I did. And you had every damn right to leave me the way you did. I only hope that you will read the entire book before making your decision. You can't judge a book without reading from cover to cover."
"I'm trying not to judge, Harden. I'm really not. But this is too much. I fell out of this pattern. And I didn't see this coming, and I still can't wrap my head around it."
Her head shakes as if she's trying to clear the rapid thoughts that I see firing behind those beautiful eyes.
"I know, baby, I know."
When I reach for one of her hands and wrap my fingers around it, she winces. I gently turn her hand over to examine the welts covering the skin on her palm.
"You okay?"
She nods, allowing me to trace the wound with my fingertip.
Who would even want to read it? I can't believe so many publishers want it.
Tessa looks away from me, focusing on the city that somehow keeps moving around us, as busy as ever. A lot of people, I shrug, stating the truth.
Why? It's so... not a typical love story. I've only read a little bit of it, and I can see how dark it is.
Even the damned need their stories told, Tess.
You aren't damned, Harden,
she says, despite the betrayal she must still be feeling. I sigh, slightly agreeing with her. In hopes for redemption, maybe? Maybe not. Maybe some people only want to read about happiness and cliché love stories. But there are millions of people. People who aren't perfect and who have been through shit in their lives. And maybe they want to connect with it. Maybe they would see some of themselves in me and... hell. I rub my shaking hand over the back of my neck. Hell, maybe someone could learn something from my mistakes and yours. She's looking at me now as I vomit the words onto the concrete stairs. Uncertainty is still clear in her eyes, pushing more words from my mouth. Maybe sometimes everything isn't so black and white, and maybe not everyone is fucking perfect. I've done a lot of shit in my life, to you and to others, that I regret and I would never, ever repeat or condone. This isn't about that. This book was an outlet for me. It was another form of therapy for me. It gave me a place where I could just write whatever the fuck I wanted and what I felt. This is me and my life, and I'm not the only person out there who has made mistakes, an entire fucking book of them. And if people judge me for the dark content of my story, then that's on them. I can't possibly please everyone, and I know there will be more people, people like us, Tessa, that relate to this book and want to see someone admit their issues and deal with them in a real way. Her lips turn up at the corners, and she sighs, shaking her head slightly.
What if people don't like it? What if they don't even take the chance to read it, but they hate us for what's inside of it? I'm not ready for that type of attention. I don't want people talking about my life and judging me.
Let them hate us.
Who gives a fuck what they think?
They weren't going to read it anyway.
This is just... I can't decide how I feel about this. What type of love story is this?
Her voice is shaky and unsure. This is the type of love story that deals with real fucking problems. It's a story about forgiveness and unconditional love, and it shows how much a person can change, really change, if they try hard enough. It's the type of story that proves that anything is fucking possible when it comes to self-recovery. It shows you that if you have someone to lean on, someone who loves you and doesn't give up on you, you can find your way out of the darkness. It shows that no matter what type of parents you had or addictions you were faced with, you can overcome anything that stands in your way and become a better person. That's the type of story After is.
After?
She tilts her chin up, using her hand to shield her eyes from the sun. That's what it's called. I look away, suddenly feeling self-conscious about the name. It's about my journey after meeting you.
How much of it is bad? God, Harden, why didn't you just tell me?
I don't know, I honestly say. Not as much as you think is bad. You read the worst of it. Those pages that you didn't see, the ones that are the true essence of the story, they are about how much I love you, how you gave me a purpose in life, and how meeting you was the best thing that has ever happened to me. The unread pages share our laughs along with my struggles, our struggles. She covers her face with her hands out of frustration.
You should have told me that you were writing this. There were so many hints. How did I not see it?
I lean back against the steps. I know that I should have. But by the time I understood and began to change what I was doing wrong, I wanted it to be perfect before I showed you. I truly am sorry for that, Tessa. I love you, and I'm sorry that you found out about it this way. My intentions were not to hurt or deceive you, and I'm so sorry that you felt that way. I'm not the same man that I was when you left me, Tessa. You know that I'm not. Her voice is barely a whisper when she replies,
I don't know what to say.
Just read it. Will you please just read the entire book before making any decisions? That's all I ask. Please just read it. Her eyes close, and she shifts her body, making her knee lean into my shoulder.
Yes, I'll read it.
A fraction of air returns to my lungs. Some of the weight is lifted off my chest, and I couldn't put my relief into words even if I tried. She stands up, brushing off her scratched knees. I'll get something for you to put on those.
I'm fine. When will you stop fighting me?
I try to lighten the mood. It works, and she fights a smile.
Never.
She begins to walk up the steps, and I stand to follow her. I want to go into the apartment and sit next to her as she reads the entire novel, but I know that I shouldn't. I use the small amount of judgment that I have and decide to take a walk around this dirty city.
Wait!
I call after her when she reaches the top. I reach into my pocket and pull out a crumpled piece of paper.
Read this last, please. It's the last page.
She opens her hand and holds it out in front of her. I take the steps quickly, two at a time, and place the wad of paper into her hand.
Please don't peek, I beg of her.
I won't.
Tessa turns away from me, and I study the way she turns her head to smile back at me. One of my greatest wishes in life would be for her to understand, to truly understand that she is rare. She is one of the few people in this world who know forgiveness, and when many would call her weak, she is truly the opposite. She's strong. Strong for standing by someone who hated himself. Strong for showing me that I'm not damned, that I am worthy of love too, despite growing up thinking the opposite. She was strong enough to walk away from me when she did, and she's strong enough to love unconditionally. Tessa is stronger than most, and I hope she knows that.
Chapter 75. Tessa. When I enter the apartment, I take a moment to gather my thoughts, which are shooting this way and that. When I reach the binder lying on the table, all of the pages are shoved inside out of order. I reach for the first page, holding my breath as I prepare myself to read. Will his words change my mind? Will they hurt me? I'm not even sure that I'm ready to find out, but I know that I need to do this for myself. I need to read his words and his emotions to see what was going through his mind all of those times when I couldn't read him. That's when he knew. That moment was when he fucking knew that he wanted to spend his life with her, that his life would be meaningless and empty without the light that Tessa brings into it. She gave him hope. She made him feel as if maybe, just maybe, he could be more than his past. I dropped the page to the floor and start on another. He lived his life for himself, and then it shifted. It became much more than waking up and going to sleep. She gave him everything he never knew that he needed. He couldn't believe the shit that came from his mouth. He was disgusting. He hurt the people that loved him, and he just couldn't stop. Why do they love me? He constantly wondered. Why would anyone love me? I'm not worthy of it. Those thoughts filled his head, haunted him no matter how much he hid from them. They always returned. He wanted to kiss away her tears. He wanted to tell her that he was sorry and that he was a ruined man, but he couldn't. He was a coward and he was damaged beyond repair, and treating her this way made him hate himself even more. Her laugh. Her laugh was the sound that brought him out of the darkness and into the light. Her laugh dragged him by his damn collar through the bullshit clouding his mind and infecting his thoughts. He wasn't the same man that his father was, and he decided then, as she walked away from him, that he would never let the mistakes of his parents control his life again. He decided then that this woman was worth more than a broken man could offer, and so he did everything in his power to make it up to her. page after page, confession after dark confession. I continue to read. My tears have stained my cheeks, along with some of the pages of his beautiful yet twisted story. He needed to tell her. He needed to tell her how fucking sorry he was for the nerve he had to throw children in her face. He was selfish, thinking only of the way he could hurt her, and he wasn't ready to admit what he truly wanted out of life with her. He wasn't ready to tell her that she would make the most amazing mother, that she would be nothing like the woman who raised her. He wasn't ready to tell her that he would try his hardest to be good enough to help raise a child with her. He wasn't ready to tell her that he was absolutely terrified of making the same mistakes that his father had made. And he wasn't ready to admit that he was afraid of failing. He didn't know the words to express that. He didn't want to come home drunk, and he didn't want his children to run and hide from him the way that he did his own father. He wanted to marry her, to spend his life by her side, reveling in her kindness and her warmth. He couldn't imagine a life without her, and he was trying to figure out a way to tell her this, to show her that he really could change, and that he could be worthy of her. Time passes somehow, and before long, hundreds of pages are scattered on the floor. I am unaware of how much time has passed, and I couldn't possibly count the tears that have fallen from my eyes, or the sobs that have escaped through my lips. I keep going, though. I read every single page, out of order, scattered and disarranged, but I make sure to soak in every single confession from the man that I love, the only man outside of my father that I have ever loved. And by the time I reach the end of the stack of pages, the apartment has grown darker and the sun has begun to set. I look around the mess I've made and try to take it all in. My eyes scan the floor, resting on the crumpled ball of paper on the entry table. Harden said that it's the last page, the very last page of this story, our story, and I try to calm myself before reaching for it. My hands shake as I pick it up, unwrap the crinkled page, and read the words written there. He hopes that she will read this someday, and that she will understand just how broken he was. He doesn't ask for her pity or her forgiveness. He only asks that she see just how much she affected his life. That she, the beautiful stranger with a kind heart, turned into his lifeline and made him into the man he is today. He hopes that with these words, no matter how harsh some of them are, she will be proud of herself for dragging a sinner from the pits of hell and raising him into her heaven, allowing him redemption and freedom from the demons of his past. He prays that she will take every single word to heart, and that maybe, just maybe, she will still love him after everything they have gone through. He hopes that she will be able to remember why she loved him, why she fought so hard for him. Lastly, he hopes that wherever she may be, as she reads the book that he wrote for her, she will read it with a light heart, and that she will reach out to him, even if these words find her years from now. She has to know that he hasn't given up. Tessa has to know that this man will always love her, and that he will be waiting for the rest of his life, whether she returns to it or not. He wants her to know that she was his savior, and that he could never repay her for everything she has done for him, and that he loves her with his entire soul, and nothing will ever change that. He wants to remind her that, whatever their souls are made of, his and hers are the same. Their favorite novel said it best. I gather every last bit of strength left inside me and leave the scattered pages on the floor of the apartment, the last page of the book still in my hand. Chapter 76. Tessa, 2 years later.
You are absolutely stunning. Such a beautiful bride, Karen gushes.
I nod, agreeing with her. I adjust the straps on my own gown and look back into the mirror. He's going to be so stricken. I still can't believe how fast this day has come. I smile, placing one last bobby pin into the thick wave of hair pinned up in ringlets and glistening under the bright lights in the back room of the church. I may have sprayed too much glitter onto her hair. What if I trip? What if he doesn't show at the altar? Landon's gorgeous bride has a soft voice, one so full of nerves that she may snap any moment.
He will. Ken drove him to the church this morning,
Karen laughs, reassuring the two of us. My husband would have alerted us by now. Landon wouldn't miss this for the world, I promise. I know he wouldn't, because I saw his face and wiped away the tears under his eyes when he showed me the ring he'd picked out for her. I sure hope not. I will be really pissed. She lets out a nervous laugh. Her smile is so lovely, even with the anxiety buzzing beneath the surface of the beauty. She's holding herself together quite well. My fingers gently brush over her dark curls, adjusting the sheer veil on her head. I glance at her beautiful face in the mirror and lift my hand to touch her bare shoulder. Her brown eyes are filled with tears, and she's chewing nervously on her lower lip. It will be fine. You'll be fine, I promise. The silver of my dress shines under the light, and I admire the beauty of every detail behind this wedding. Is it too soon? We've only been back together for a few months. Do you think it's too soon, Tessa? She asks me. I've grown so close with her in the past 2 years, I could sense her worry when her fingers started trembling as she helped me zip my bridesmaid's gown. I smile. It's not too soon. You two have been through so much in the last few years. You're just overthinking this. I know a thing or two about that. Are you nervous to see him? She asks, eyes searching my face. Yes. Terrified. Maybe a little panicked. No, it's only been a few months. Too long, Landon's mother says under her breath. My heart grows heavy, and I press back the distant ache that accompanies every thought surrounding him. I swallow the words I could, and maybe should, say. Can you believe that your son is getting married today? I quickly change the subject. My distraction works like magic, and Karen smiles, squeals, and begins to tear up at once. Oh, my makeup will be a mess. She pats her fingertips under her eyes, and her light brown hair moves with her as she shakes her head. A knock at the door silences the three of us.
Honey?
Ken's voice is soft and cautious. Approaching the bride's room full of emotional women will do that to a man.
Abby just woke from a nap,
Ken tells his wife as he opens the door, his daughter on his hip. Her dark brown hair and bright brown eyes are striking, lighting up every room the little girl enters.
I can't seem to find the diaper bag.
It's over there next to the chair. Karen points. Could you feed her? I'm afraid she'll throw mashed peas at my dress. Karen laughs, reaching for Abby. Terrible twos have come a little early for us. The little girl smiles, showing a full row of tiny half-teeth. Mama, the chubby toddler calls, reaching both of her little hands to grasp the strap of Karen's dress. My heart melts every time I hear Abby speak. Hi, Miss Abby. I poke the little girl's cheek, making her giggle. It's a beautiful sound. I ignore the way Karen and Landon's soon-to-be wife stare at me with sympathy in their eyes. Hi. Abby buries her face into her mom's shoulder.
Are you ladies almost ready? We only have about 10 minutes until the music will start, and Landon's getting more anxious every second, Ken warns.
He's okay, right? He still wants to marry me? The worried bride asks her future father-in-law. Ken smiles, eyes crinkling at the corners.
Yes, dear, of course he does. Landon's nervous as he could be, but Harden's helping him with that.
Every one of us, myself included, laughs at this. The bride rolls her eyes in humor and shakes her head. If Harden's helping out, I better cancel the honeymoon now.
We better get going. I'll feed Abby something small to hold her over until the reception.
Ken kisses his wife on the mouth before taking the toddler back into his arms and leaving the room. Yes, please don't worry for me. I'm okay, I promise the two women. I am okay. I've been okay with the long-distance kind of relationship with Harden. I miss him constantly, yes, but the space has been good for us. The worst part of being okay is that okay is far from happy. Okay is that gray space in the middle where you can wake up each day and carry on with your life, even laugh and smile often. But okay isn't joy. Okay isn't looking forward to each second of your day, and okay isn't getting the most out of life. Being okay is what most people settle for, myself included, and we pretend that okay is fine, when we actually hate it, and we spend the majority of our time waiting to break out of just being okay. He gave me a taste of how great life can be outside of okay, and I've missed it ever since. I've been okay for a long time, and I'm not sure how to get out of it now. But I hope for the day that I can say, I'm great, instead of, I'm okay. You ready, Mrs. Gibson? I smile at the lucky woman in front of me. No, she says, but I will be as soon as I see him.
Chapter 77. Harden. Last chance to bail, I say to Landon while helping him adjust his tie.
Thanks, jerk,
he fires back, pushing my hands away to mess with the crooked tie. I've worn 100 ties in my life, yet this one refuses to straighten out. He's nervous, and I feel for him. Sort of. Don't wear one, then.
I can't just not wear a tie. I'm getting married.
He rolls his eyes.
That's exactly why you don't have to wear a tie. It's your day, and you're the one spending all this money. If you don't want to wear a tie, don't wear a fucking tie.
Hell, if I was the one getting married today, they would be lucky if I wore pants. My best friend laughs. His fingers twist and tug at the tie around his neck.
A good thing you aren't, then. I wouldn't come to that spectacle.
We both know that I'll never be married. I stare at myself in the mirror.
Maybe.
Landon's eyes meet mine in the mirror.
You're okay, right?
She's here. Your dad saw her.
Hell no, I'm not.
Yeah, I'm okay. You act like I didn't know she was coming or that I haven't seen her in the last 2 years. I haven't seen her nearly enough, but she needed the distance from me. She's your best friend and your bridesmaid of honor. This is no surprise to me. I pull the tie from my own neck and hand it to him.
Here, since yours is a piece of shit, you can have mine. You have to wear a tie. It goes with your tux. You know damn well you're lucky I'm wearing this thing in the first place.
I tug at the heavy material covering my body. Landon's eyes close briefly, and he sighs in both relief and frustration.
I suppose you're right.
He smiles.
Thanks.
And for wearing clothes to your wedding?
Shut up.
He rolls his eyes and runs his hands down the sleeves of his crisp black tuxedo.
What if she doesn't show up at the altar?
She will.
But what if she doesn't? Am I crazy for getting married so fast?
Yes.
Well, thanks.
I shrug. Crazy isn't always a bad thing. He takes me in, his eyes searching my face for some sort of hint that I may unravel at any time.
Are you going to try to talk to her?
Yes, obviously. I tried to make conversation with her at the rehearsal dinner, but Karen and Landon's bride were stuck by her side like glue. Tessa's helping to plan the wedding was a surprise to me. I didn't know she was into that type of thing, but apparently she's pretty damn good at it.
She's happy now. Not completely, but mostly.
Her happiness is the most important thing, and not just to me. The world simply isn't the same when Tessa Young isn't happy. I would know. I spent an entire year draining the life from her while simultaneously making her shine. It's fucked up and makes no sense to the outside world, but I have never, and will never, give a shit about the outside world when it comes to that woman.
5 minutes, guys.
Ken's voice sounds from the other side of the door. This room is small and smells like old leather and mothballs. But this is Landon's wedding day. I'll wait until after the reception to complain about it.
Maybe I'll just take my complaint straight to Ken. I suspect he's the one paying for this shit anyway, given the state of the bride's parents and all.
You ready, you crazy bastard?
I ask Landon one last time.
No, but I will be when I see her.
Chapter 78. Tessa. Where's Robert? Karen looks around the small wedding party. Tessa, do you know where he ran off to? She asks, panic in her voice. Robert had taken on the task of entertaining the toddler while the women were getting their hair curled and faces painted on. Now that the wedding is starting, he's taken his role back on, but he's nowhere to be found, and Karen can't hold Abby while helping with the first part of the wedding. Let me call him again. I glance around the crowd, searching for him. Abby thrashes in Karen's arms, and she looks panicked once again. Oh, wait! There he is! But I don't hear the rest of Karen's sentence. I'm completely distracted by the sound of Hardin's voice. He's walking out from the long hallway to my left, his mouth moving in that slow way it always has as he talks to Landon. His hair is longer than it looked in the pictures I've seen of him recently. I can't help that I've been reading every single one of his interviews, every article about him, whether it's true or false, and maybe, just maybe, I've emailed a few heated complaints to bloggers who have printed terrible things about him and his story, our story. The sight of the metal ring in his lips surprises me, even though I knew it had reappeared. I had forgotten how good it looks on him in person. I'm taken, absolutely consumed by seeing him again, thrown back into a world where I fought hard in and lost nearly every battle that was thrown my way, only to leave without the one thing that I was fighting for. Him. We need someone to walk with Tessa. Her boyfriend didn't show up, someone says. At the mention of my name, Hardin's focus snaps forward. His eyes search for half a second before he finds me. I break the connection first, looking down at my high heels barely peeking out from underneath my floor-length dress. Who's walking with the maid of honor? The bride's sister asks everyone nearby. There's too much going on, she says with a huff as she walks past me. I've done more than she has for this wedding, but her stress level would make you believe otherwise.
I am. Hardin says, raising his hand.
He looks so put together, so devastatingly handsome in a black tuxedo with no tie. Black ink shows just above the clean white collar, and I feel a soft touch on my arm. I blink a few times, trying not to focus on the way we barely spoke last night and how we didn't practice walking together like we should have. I nod, clearing my throat and tearing my eyes away from Hardin. All right then, let's go. The sister says imperiously. Groom to the altar, please. She claps her hands and Landon rushes past, gently squeezing my hand en route. Breathe in, breathe out. It's only for a few minutes. Less than that, really. It's not that difficult of a concept. We are friends. I can do this. For Landon's wedding, of course. Momentarily, I battle within myself to not think about walking down the aisle with him for our own special day. Hardin stands next to me without a word, and the music begins. He's staring at me. I know that he is, but I can't bring myself to glance up at him. With these shoes, I'm near his height, and he's standing so closely that I can smell the soft cologne clinging to his tux. The small church has been transformed into a beautiful yet simple venue, and the guests have quietly filled almost every row. Beautiful flowers, so brightly colored that they may as well be neon, cover the old wooden pews, and white cloth is draped from row to row.
It's a little too bright, don't you think? I think simple red and white lilies would have done the trick.
Hardin surprises me by saying. His arm loops through mine as the snooty sister waves for the two of us to begin our descent down the aisle. Yeah, lilies would have been gorgeous. This is nice, too, for them. I fumble.
Your doctor boyfriend cleans up nicely,
Hardin taunts me. I look over to find him smiling, only teasing behind his green eyes. His jawline is even more defined than before, and his eyes are deeper, not as guarded as they always were. He's in med school, not a doctor yet. And yes, he cleans up nicely. You know he's not my boyfriend, so hush. Over the last 2 years, I have had this same conversation with Hardin again and again. Robert has been a constant friend in my life, nothing more. We tried dating once, about a year after I found Hardin's manuscript in my New York apartment, but it just didn't work. You shouldn't date someone if your heart is owned by someone else. It doesn't work. Trust me.
How are you two? It's been a year now, hasn't it?
His voice betrays the emotion he's trying to hide. What about you? You and that blonde. What was her name? This aisle is a lot longer to walk down than it looked from the hallway. Oh yeah, Eliza or something? He chuckles.
Ha ha.
I like to give him shit about a fan-turned-stalker of his named Eliza. I know he hasn't slept with her, but it's fun to tease him when I see him.
Baby, the last blonde I had in my bed was you.
He smiles. My feet catch and Harden grips my elbow, steadying me before I fall face first onto the white silk covering the aisle. Is that so?
Yep.
He keeps his eyes toward the front of the church where Landon stands. You put your lip ring back in. I change the subject before I embarrass myself further. We walk past my mother, sitting quietly next to her husband, David. She looks slightly worried, but I give her credit when she smiles at Harden and me when we pass. David leans into her, whispering something, and she smiles again, nodding to him.
She seems much happier now,
Harden whispers. We probably shouldn't be talking as we walk down the aisle, but Harden and I are known for doing things that we shouldn't do. I've missed him more than I'm letting on. I've only seen him 6 times in the last 2 years, and each time only made me ache for him more. She is. David has been an incredible influence on her.
I know. She told me.
I stop again. This time Harden smiles while helping me continue down the never-ending aisle. What do you mean?
Your mum. I've spoken to her a few times. You know that.
I have no clue what he's talking about.
She came to a signing last month when my second book came out.
What? What did she say? My voice is too loud and a few guests stare at us for much too long.
We will talk after this. I promised Landon that I wouldn't ruin his wedding.
Harden smiles at me as we reach the altar, and I really do try to focus on my best friend's wedding. But I can't keep my eyes or mind off the best man.
Chapter 79. Harden. The reception of a wedding is its most tolerable part. Everyone is a little less uptight, and easily loosened up by a few glasses of free booze and an overpriced complimentary meal. The wedding was flawless. The groom cried more than the bride, and I am proud of myself for only staring at Tessa 99% of the time. I heard some of the vows, I swear I did. That's about it, though. Judging by the way Landon's arms are wrapped around his new wife's waist, and the way she's laughing at something he's saying as they dance across the floor in front of everyone, I would say the wedding went well. I'll take a club soda if you have it, I tell the woman behind the bar.
With vodka or gin?
She asks, pointing to the row of bottles of liquor. Neither, just the soda. No liquor. She stares at me for a moment before nodding and filling a clear glass with ice and soda.
There you are,
a familiar voice says as a hand touches my shoulder. Vance is behind me, his pregnant wife next to him.
Been looking for me, have you?
I sarcastically remark.
He has not,
Kimberly smiles, her hand resting on her giant belly.
You okay? You look like you're going to fall over with that thing.
I look down at her swollen feet, then back up to her sour expression.
That thing is my baby in there. I'm 9 months pregnant, but I will still slap you.
Well, guess her sass is still intact.
If you can reach past that stomach of yours, of course.
I tease. She proves me wrong. Sure enough, I'm slapped by a pregnant woman at a wedding. I rub my arm as if she actually hurt me, and she laughs when Vance calls me an asshole for goading his wife.
You look nice walking down the aisle with Tessa, he says, raising a suggestive brow.
My breath catches, and I clear my throat, searching the dark room for her long blonde hair and that sinful satin dress.
Yeah, I wasn't going to be doing any wedding party shit outside of being Landon's best man, but it wasn't so bad.
That other guy's here now, Kim says knowingly. But he's not actually her boyfriend. You didn't buy that crap, did you? She spends time with him, but you can tell by the way they act that it's nothing serious. Not like you two are.
Were.
Kim grins at me, a cunning look, and nods her head to direct me to the table closest to the bar. Tessa is sitting there, silky dress shining under the moving lights. Her eyes are on me, or maybe Kimberly. No, her eyes are on me, and she quickly looks away.
See, like I said, you two are.
Smug and pregnant, Kimberly laughs at my expense, and I down my club soda and toss the cup in the trash before ordering a water. My stomach is twisting and turning, and I'm acting like a little fucking child right now, trying not to stare at the beautiful girl who stole my heart all those years ago. She didn't just steal the damn thing. She found it. She was the one to discover that I even had a heart to begin with, and she dug it out. Struggle after struggle, she never gave up. She found my heart, and she kept it safe. She hid it from the fucked up world. Most important, she hid it from me until I was ready to care for it myself. She tried to give it back 2 years ago, but my heart refused to leave her side. It will never, ever leave her side. You two are the most stubborn people I've ever met, Vance says while ordering a water for Kimberly and a glass of wine for himself. Have you seen your brother? I look around the room for Smith and find him sitting a few tables down from Tessa, alone. I point to the boy, and Vance asks me to find out if he wants something to drink. The kid's old enough to get his own damn drink.